Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in this week to Get Yourself the Job. We're here every Monday at 4 p.m. This week, I am delighted to have a friend, a colleague, and a mentor, Wendy Sweet, on the show. And Wendy is somebody who has close to 20 years of experience running law firms in the Southern California area. She has a master's in psychology in addition to a business bachelor's degree from the University of Phoenix, and she has spent most of her career training, developing, and guiding her diverse teams to success in the legal market. In 2005, right around when I connected with Wendy, she joined Jackson Lewis's Los Angeles office and helped them open the firm's first Orange County, San Diego, and Napa offices. Wendy is highly regarded in the legal community as an expert in the field of human resources and talent development, and I'm delighted to have you here today. Wendy, thank you so much for being here.
Jen, thank you so much for having me. It's a special treat. Appreciate
it. Yeah, so I'm very excited. What Wendy and I are going to talk a little bit about today is Wendy has a wide breadth of experience ranging in all aspects of training, development, hiring, talent acquisition, you name it. But what Wendy and I thought about and we thought might be really interesting to talk about today is what happens if you land the wrong job. And so we're going to discuss how do you handle it if you land the wrong job? When is a good time to leave? How do you handle it when you're applying for a new job or presenting those reasons for leaving to an employer? It can be a really sticky area, but I'm sure all of us have gone through it at one point or another. And finally, Wendy's going to tell you, what do you do once you get a job you like, and how do you stay engaged? We're all going to go through lulls, whether it's personally, professionally. There are going to be little lulls in our career, and how do you make sure that if you find a job that you like and think could be a home, that you're constantly re-engaging in that job? So, Wendy, tell us a little bit about it. I mean, we've all been there in the past where we might have taken a job, and they razzle-dazzle us, right? They sell us the sun, the moon, and the stars. They tell us it's our dream job, and we think it's our dream job, and yet a week, 2 weeks, 2 months, or 2 years in, it winds up not being the right job. On your end, obviously, you've been in the human resources field for well over 10, 20 years. What would you say are some things that you could do if you start to notice that your career or your job is going down that path?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is understand why you're feeling that way. Find the cause of those thoughts. Is it one person? Is it the entire organization?
Yeah.
Is it the philosophy? Is it the vibe? You have to understand where that feeling's coming from. And then you have to decide what you can do, what you should do. And a good friend of mine who's a speaker, Marsha Petry Sue, she advocates applying TLC to the situation. And for her, that means that you can take it, you can leave it, or you can change it.
I love that. That's brilliant. I know you mentioned that the other day to me, and I didn't know what that stood for. So that's great. So tell us a little bit more about that.
So, you know, you find yourself in a situation where things aren't going the way you thought they would, the way you want them to. You come home. You're happy to be home. You don't want to go back the next day.
So you nobody's ever felt like that, right?
Right?
We all love our jobs.
Everybody's felt that way.
Yeah.
But if it's ongoing, if it lasts every day, day in, day out, you're miserable. I don't like to stay miserable.
Who does?
I've invited people to leave if the fit isn't right anymore, and we haven't been able to fix it for them. So I say, you know, take some ownership. Decide what it is that you would want to change if you could. And then talk to your supervisors, your managers about that. Is there a way to make a change within the organization for yourself to fix that problem? And it's important that you communicate because people won't know how you're feeling unless you do. You won't have a chance to get it fixed unless you share with others what is happening and others that have control over fixing it, not just others within the organization, but people who actually can help you fix it.
What would you suggest? Because I see this so often on my side of owning a recruitment company where people call in or they'll be very upset, and they could have been at a job 5, 10, 20 years. And then just a couple weeks ago this happened, and this woman was, she went from being a few weeks back to, yeah, I think I might start checking things out, I'm not sure, to, oh my God, get me the heck out of Dodge, I'm miserable, etc. But that's one of the things I've personally warned job seekers about, is making an emotional decision rather than probably what your friend, Marsha, is that her name?
Marsha.
Yeah, what your friend Marsha would advocate, which is making or taking a more thoughtful approach to it. What would you recommend to somebody if, say, you've been kind of toying around with the idea and you're like, yeah, you know, I don't like my bosses, etc., but then you go through maybe a bad week or a bad day and you just feel like, I need to get out of here. How would you recommend that somebody approaches that if you're, say, in the human resources side and you know that this person has been waffling back and forth?
Well, I think a conversation is where it has to start. And as a manager, if you see that somebody's acting out, if they're having a rough week and they're not acting like they normally would, they're making poor decisions, they're calling in, they're coming in late, you know, all the signs that something's amiss, I think it's important to sit down and find out what's going on. I mean, you can rescue an employee that's going off the deep end simply by acknowledging that, you know, they're important to the organization. Maybe they have a special talent that you've never
encountered before.
Yeah, encountered, or you've never even explored it with them. You've never gotten to know them well enough. So there have been times where I've literally had a conversation saying, if this isn't the right fit for you anymore, then you should go out, because you spend far too many hours on the job to hate it.
Yeah.
But if you want to turn this around and become a productive, you know,
team member,
happy about what you're doing, you know, let's figure out what would make you happy. Not every manager is going to be that way, though, and I recognize that. But I think it's important that each one of us understand ourselves, that we think about talking to the right people, give it a chance to work. A lot of times people assume that there's no...
They throw the baby out with the bathwater. They just assume
there's
that
no
there's
solution.
No
Nobody's
solution.
Nobody's going to listen to them. Yeah, exactly. And that disheartens me, because I always feel that there can be a solution.
Yeah,
I think people don't look hard enough for them.
Yeah, I was just talking on Sam's show, actually, who owns the station, the other day, about how most of us think we live in an either-or world. Like, either I can have a job I like, or I could be happy.
Yeah.
You know, but there is, if you're willing to communicate first, which I think is critical, that's factor number one. And two, if you're willing to look for a solution, just like you and I were talking about right before we came on the air, everything in life comes down to perspective. And if your perspective is of one that I'm going to fail, there's no solution, the world is against me, and you know, you're setting yourself up for failure and disappointment. But the thing is, it's a pattern and it's going to happen. It's not just going to be that job. Oftentimes, I'm sure you've seen it, people have the same reason for leaving every job and they can't figure out the pattern.
Yeah, I know that it's probably a saying that's been used far too much, but if you keep doing the same thing, expecting a different result, that's the definition
of insanity.
Right.
You're absolutely right.
There's some truth to that. You know, we often push responsibility for things that happen to ourselves on other people.
We blame, justify.
And I think that we're not self-aware enough sometimes. And if we just take a step back, give people the benefit of the doubt, understand that it's not just black and white, that there definitely is a gray area and every color in between too. I think we owe it to ourselves to make it work. Maybe we don't even know what makes us happy.
That's the thing, is I think that it's chasing the dragon. I think that's a term for heroin addicts that I've heard, is that, no, really, you chase the dragon. Is people are just chasing this figment of their imagination, which is happiness. And I think happiness starts with creating a foundation of finding it within yourself. And people tend to look outwards for happiness and blaming others in situations.
Right.
There was a great documentary. I don't know if you ever saw it, called Happy. Did you ever see that one?
I'm not sure that I did.
Oh, I highly recommend it to any of our listeners out there. I remember being so awestruck right when when my husband and I started watching the movie one night. It was on Netflix, and the movie begins with this family in India, and they have a tent, less than a tent. They have a tarp over them, and they have maybe five children and a mother and a father. Their level of happiness was at about a level 9.5 or 10 on a scale of 1 to 10, and here we are in the United States, and our happiness quotient is at perhaps a level 5, and that might be a bit optimistic. And so it all had to do with, I think that here in the United States, we're so focused on materialism, and particularly in Los Angeles, quite frankly, is it's about, you know, keeping up with the Joneses and trying to make sure you have the latest Tesla or the greatest house. And people get so competitive that they become so dissatisfied with what could be a really great job because they're basing their happiness on external rather than internal factors.
I couldn't agree more. And I think finding what makes you happy inside is a big part of being happy on the job. And when you find that happiness within yourself and you interview, people will see it.
It does. You see it attractive on people's faces. Yeah. It's this energy.
And when you surround yourself with that type of energy, you'll be able to see, recognize opportunities when they come. And you'll know when it's right to move. You won't even have to second guess yourself. You'll know. You'll know when the right opportunity is there. And it's important, I think, to take risks. You know, obviously, we're talking about people's livelihoods, getting a job, paying the rent, paying the car payment, taking care of family. So there's always that pressure. But we should try to be honest, help people understand what makes us tick. You know, even if it's just a little glimpse at the interview stage.
Yeah, be authentic.
Be authentic. That's so important. It doesn't have to be a game.
Now, what you brought up an interesting point earlier that I don't want to skim over. So you said, you know, oftentimes, what do you do if there's an individual? Is it the individual? Is it a culture? Is it somebody on your team? How would you recommend? Because like we just said, energetically, you can be in a room with people, and if somebody is giving you the evil eye or the stink eye, you know, the whole day while you're at the office, is that a point where you as a manager would encourage somebody to look for something else, or do you think that's a situation that could be remedied?
Oh, no, I think it can be remedied. As a manager, I have remedied it.
Wow.
And I've had it, you know, that stink eye looking at me.
I know, that's the worst. The stink eye is a thing.
But, you know, the hardest thing to do is the time that leads up to the conversation that you have with that person. It's like climbing Mount Everest. Once you get to the top, which is the conversation,
wow,
it's all downhill from there. And not downhill in a bad way. It means it's easier.
You're downhill skiing. It's just easy and effortless.
Exactly. It's easy, effortless. It's a beautiful scene. Getting up there, you don't notice anything around you. You have those blinders on. But once you have that conversation, it's often not as bad as you thought it was going to be. Sometimes it's very enlightening. In fact, I had one employee who just always was kind of the
Debbie Downer.
Debbie Downer. She was like that little pebble in your shoe that just constantly
eats at you, can't get it out.
Disruptive during meetings and particularly hateful toward management and vocal about it.
Yeah,
and,
that's the best. That's so much fun.
Yeah, it caught me off guard at one meeting and I wasn't on my game. And I, not that I play games, but I wasn't at my best. And she caught me right at that moment. And I was surprised and I didn't know how to respond. So it was embarrassing for me.
Yeah.
So I talked to her in my office, and I asked her if she'd always had a problem with management wherever she worked, or was it just me?
Oh, okay.
And she said, I guess I've always had a problem with management.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
And that was enlightening for me, because I could work with that. If it wasn't just me, if it was the whole establishment, I could deal with that. And I also decided that I needed to be better prepared in the future for those similar situations, not just in the workplace, but in all of life.
Professionally, so personally.
I decided to work on myself, and I took some steps outside of work. I worked with certain people. They helped me to get past that, and I am better at handling those situations.
Because of that person.
And
wow,
she's still
great.
There where I work. And she knows she's been that catalyst for me. So you never know what's going to come from a conversation. So I always try to tell people, don't be afraid. It may be scary, but walk through that door. you know, have that conversation, ask for that honesty. And if you're not getting that from that person, is there somebody else that you can talk to that may give you that few minutes that you need?
Yeah, this may seem silly or trivial, but I remember a couple of weeks back I was on a flight, and I think it was a movie, Cinderella. I don't know if you saw the latest one. I know, this is such a silly tie-in, but I'll never forget what really resonated with me in that movie is that the little girl, Cinderella, in that movie, her mother said, anything can be accomplished with courage and kindness. And that just really hit a chord with me, because especially in the business world, if you just took an approach of being courageous and having those difficult-to-have conversations, whether it's with somebody you're in an adversarial relationship with management about those scary-to-have conversations, and if you approached it from a place of compassion and kindness rather than entitlement. I was just writing a blog on this the other day about, you know, if you're going in for a raise, we talked about this a few weeks ago, if you go in from a place of, I deserve this, I'm entitled to this, it's going to automatically create that adversarial relationship. But if you're courageous and kind about it, and it doesn't matter what the context of the conversation is, it really does sound cliche, but I feel like anything is possible.
And I think you could really be dubbed Cinderella, because you're both courageous and you're kind, and some people are afraid of that.
Really? Why do you think people would be afraid of that?
Because they're not courageous, and they don't always know how to be kind. And so it's foreign to them. But there, I think, are so many more people who grasp that concept and love it. I find that people are afraid to rock the boat. People are afraid to be to start that conversation.
To be seen as an outsider.
I had three employees all in the same department. Two worked in one office, one worked in another. The gentleman was constantly upset with the two ladies that were in the other office. It went on and on, and there was all sorts of crazy stuff that came.
Just
that
upset
we were dealing
and
with.
Drama.
Yes, I took him into a room one day, and I just said,
I hope you had Nerf bats. Just an idea for future reference.
That's right. But I took him to a room one day, and I said, what's going on? I mean, I don't get it. Why are you so upset with them? And he said, well, they don't always say hello to me when I pass them in the hall.
Wow.
And I said, okay, but they seem very friendly. Oh, they say hi the first time, but they don't say hi every time. And I said, well, how many times do you pass them in the hall? I don't know, maybe a couple dozen a day. And I thought,
wow.
Well, and we approached the ladies about it, and they said, you know, we're sometimes focusing, we don't even see
you're single focused, you don't even see it.
And it's not necessary to say hi. It doesn't mean we don't like you. It just means we're focusing and, you know, we're getting on with business. After that, it was fine. So it's sometimes the smallest little thing.
That is so interesting that you bring that up. And I'll give a story right now with my mother-in-law, who I love and adore, and she stays with us for 3 months out of every year. And what's really interesting is she thought for the longest time that I had something against her, that I didn't like her, because for me, I'm on the phone all day, I'm interacting with people all day, and my favorite thing to do when I get home is go in bed and read a book. And so here she would be at home, and she was amazing. And would have dinner cooked and would be super helpful, and she just wanted to interact. And then one day, you know, something blew up, and she's like, well, Jen, you just don't like me. I was like, you're right, I love you. And she said, well, you never interact with me when we get home. I was like, oh, you think that's about you? It has nothing to do with you. I love you tremendously. I just am the sort of person where I'm actually more of an introvert, and I like to have my time and space.
Sure.
And so it's all these, I call it unfulfilled expectations that lead to resentments. And we see it so much in offices of professionals at all levels, whether it's peers, managers, right. And people get upset over things that could easily be remedied just by a conversation, like you said.
And sometimes, you know, a big part of my job is actually being a referee between people's emails.
Oh, my goodness. I can only imagine.
Yeah, they just decide for themselves what that other person meant, what that intention was. And my favorite saying is that intention and impact hardly ever are the same.
Intention and impact are hardly ever the same. Interesting. Okay, I could
see
that.
So a person's intention, that what they mean to say in that email,
oh, I see where you're
doesn't
going.
Have the impact that they expect. They don't match. So that other person, the impact that it has on them, it could be devastating.
It could be disempowering. They could be left feeling.
Just because the way somebody's phrased something, a word that they
or
used.
God forbid that you use all caps. Caps come into play, then
please don't use all caps.
Ever. I don't think there's ever a good time to use all caps and get a positive result.
Never a good time. Yes, it could be just the smallest thing, and you're holding that grudge against somebody else, and that's another thing. When you're finding that job and you're finding it's the wrong job, and I said before, find out why. Is it just one person? A lot of times that person doesn't even know that they have bugged you that much.
Yeah.
That person doesn't even know that you're holding a grudge against them or you're hurt by them. They have no clue. And I've seen it happen so many times that I believe this wholeheartedly. You are giving them a lot of power over yourself.
So true, absolutely.
So figure it out. Be self-aware. Talk to that person.
On that note, here's a question for you. So say you're somebody who's in that situation. There's a colleague or somebody at the office who you don't have the healthiest relationship with. Would you advise that person approaches the individual directly, or should they go to management first? What do you think would be a better approach?
Either could work. I'm a big advocate for talking to the person directly, going to the source. And most of the people that I talk to when I'm the intermediary, they wonder why that person didn't just come talk to them.
And they even get offended sometimes. I've seen that happen.
And they're like, why do they have to bring it to management? And I said, maybe they don't feel
comfortable
that they can approach you. Approachability is another big deal. People think they're approachable, but maybe they're not.
Yeah.
Some people are really scared of confrontation. They're not adept at conversation, communication. It's something you have to actively
work at,
yes, to become a good communicator, an effective communicator. And so I try to help people become that. And sometimes it's getting in a room together and just having them ask a few questions and have them talk it out together. Sometimes I'll say, go to lunch on the firm. Go talk it out, because it's disrupting the rest of this place. Maybe you guys just need to go find a different level.
And just sometimes get connected, too, mm-hmm. because I find that we don't realize that we're all human beings at the end of the day, and we see ourselves as separate, whether it's because of age or all mm-hmm. sorts of different reasons culturally where we come from.
Absolutely.
And if you can look for the similarities in one another rather than the differences, you're automatically going to find yourself to be more connected with other human beings wherever you go, personally or professionally.
I'm more tolerant.
Exactly.
I've worked with both my sons. They've both worked at the law firms that I've worked at, and one of my sons is currently there. And they're in their 20s, and we have people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. At times, we've had teenagers, interns from high schools. So you look at all those different generations. They are going to do things differently in the workplace. They're going to communicate differently. They're going to have different work ethics and expectations and abilities. So I had to coach my sons, both of them, to get to know something special about the people that they are frustrated with, because maybe they're not as quick on the computer. Maybe they can't multitask like they can. But I said, find something that you respect
that
about
you can
that
admire
person.
In them. What a wonderful piece of advice to give your sons.
Yeah, and approach your communication with them from that place of respect. And it worked. And sometimes you just have to find something endearing about a person to be able to, like them.
Everybody does have something. It's so true that everybody has a little something. So let's say, worst case scenario, we've gone through it all. You try to have things work with management or with the other person. But at the end of the day, you go in, you're ready to give your notice, and you get fired. How do you handle that?
Yeah, so that's something that happened to me. I gave my notice. I gave 2 months' notice.
Wow.
My work ethic was very strong. This was a number of years ago, a long, long time ago. And I was fired the next day. And it thoroughly shocked my system, because I was an excellent employee. And
you're thinking, what the hell? I was trying to be a good employee.
Yeah. So that I learned a lot about that, because I thought, now what am I going to do? I have to find another job. And I've been fired. So I decided I needed to be honest with my prospective employers. And they may not believe me. They may get some other story from calling that past employer. But if you come from a place of honesty and you're sincere about
integrity
is very important. And, helping that prospective employer understand what happened. The circumstances of working there were very unhealthy, and I did not disparage that other company, but I did talk to about the impact it had on me, and that I didn't want to go any further with it because it wasn't healthy for either the company or me. I felt it would be better if they had somebody else there and I could go somewhere else. So being honest on a resume, being honest on an application is extremely important as an administrator, an HR professional. Those are the kinds of things I look for. I want good people to work with me. I want to be surrounded by people who are honest and have integrity and have good work ethics. And so I'm looking for that. I'm looking to have a conversation with those applicants, and I want to engage with them. I want to have honest answers, and I've become pretty good at recognizing when the answers aren't honest.
When they're fake.
Yeah. And I know the difference between when a person's just nervous and a person is trying to find the right answers that they think you want to hear.
Somebody just told me recently, it was a really interesting point, a friend of ours that we both know said that when he interviews people, if they look up, often they'll look up when they're coming up with an answer, if it's an honest answer, and they'll continue to look up if the next question that precedes it is also tied into the same subject, but they'll look away a different angle if they're making something up or trying to come up with a lie.
I think it's if you look to the left.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I have heard that. I'm going to have my friend who's an expert on body language on here. I don't want to misinform people.
I think that's what I learned a long time ago, if you look to the left. But there's a lot of body language.
You can tell, yeah. People get shifty. They get uncomfortable.
I had a really terrible experience with one employee. It was not a good fit, and it wasn't a good fit for a long time. But one thing that I told him resonated so much that years later when he came back to see the firm, talk to me, he said that he had never realized that crossing his arms was a sign of defensiveness.
Really?
And
wow, that's great.
I was looking at him, and his arms were on the chair rests, and he looked very different than...
It's a very different demeanor and experience.
So, people don't often... They're not aware of what
they're
doing,
subtleties.
How they're coming across. They are. A lot of subtleties. So in an interview, you want to make sure that you're aware of your body language.
And that you know what it's saying about you, and keep an open posture and sitting up straight and don't lean too far back or too far in.
Exactly. But if you're excited about something and you're engaged with that person and they lean in, it's okay to lean in.
Yeah.
But recognize that, you're not a robot. You want to put on your happy robot button.
If you were a robot, be a happy robot.
Yeah, be a happy robot. Be a conversational robot. But go with it. But I've been interviewing recently, and I think I see some people are so overzealous that they want to tell you everything, and they want to fit it all in to a half hour, 1 hour interview. Give me enough to tantalize me. Make me want more.
Give them a taste of the milk, but not the whole cow.
That's... Don't give me the cow. I don't want the cow.
Give me a steak. Give me a filet.
What a filet mignon. No.
With a béarnaise sauce on the side. Okay.
Yes. And but so I recognize that person can be nervous, but I also see that as something that could transfer into the future. And you got to be careful. Impression's very important.
So would you recommend, if, say, somebody has been fired, do they put on the application? I get asked this question all the time because there's that little itty-bitty line that most people's handwriting can't fit in to begin with, and it said, reason for leaving past position. Would you recommend that they outright say terminated or fired on the application, and will that be a do not pass go for you? Or do you recommend that they put something a little bit more delicately, was a mutual decision? How would you recommend that somebody handle that?
That's always one of the toughest areas for people. They don't want to tell their salary, and they don't want to tell why they left.
Or put their social security down if there ever is that. I get a lot of complaints about that.
People don't update their resumes or their applications. So they see that a lot. It's okay to say irreconcilable differences. It's okay to say.
Like marriage irreconcilable, filed for divorce.
Bad marriage.
Yeah. That's true. I have heard people say those exact words. It was a bad marriage.
It was a bad marriage, absolutely. Wrong fit, you know.
Not the right environment.
Outgrew the position.
Oh, okay. You know? You'd be okay with seeing something like that.
I can see that. I would. And I'm going to have them expound upon that when I have them come in.
So you wouldn't, if somebody sent an application and it did say, you know, outgrew the position, wasn't the right fit, you wouldn't necessarily just say, that's not the right person for me. You would still be willing to entertain meeting them.
Well, if they had the right qualifications.
Okay. Yes.
All other things aside, if they had the right qualifications, I would be curious to understand what that meant. I think that's because I'm compassionate. And I've had that one situation myself, and I feel that honesty is important. I might have a phone conversation with them first.
And see if they elaborate out, because I feel like there are some occasions in my experience that I've had where people are terminated or they leave a job, and it is legitimately not their fault. It has zero to do with them. It really was a cultural thing, or they were working for a jerk. But then there are other circumstances where it's a repetitive pattern that people fall into. Oh, sure. It was unfair, and people didn't treat me fairly. Oh, why'd you leave the job before? Oh, well, it just wasn't the right fit. I didn't like the environment. If you hear that over and over, then it starts to become more of a question of bad judgment, or perhaps that it is a reflection. It's like, if somebody keeps breaking up with people, who's the common denominator in that relationship? You are.
Yeah, that concept of fairness, it comes into conversation way too much.
It's just not fair.
It's just not fair. You know, having raised two sons, I've heard that more than I need
to. Oh, I'm sure.
what's fair? It takes two parties to make something work. And if you've been able to express yourself well enough, if you've been, if you've given them a fair chance, you know, a lot of times people don't, they want a fair chance, but they're not willing to give one. That does resonate with me. So that's why a phone call to talk with
them. Gives you a little insight into their background and history.
Absolutely. I can't see their body language, but I can hear their voice and
I can hear
their words.
Intonation and the way in which they speak.
So I might do that if I see something that's interesting to me, and that's the only thing on there that is upsetting or concerning, or I wouldn't even call it upsetting, but it's just, you know, a little bit of a pink flag, maybe.
A pink flag. I haven't heard that before. I like that.
A pink flag.
It's like, warning, high
yet.
Tide. The riptide's not in yet, but
exactly.
You just have to toe the water, maybe.
Exactly. So, you know, some of my worst employees have made great employees elsewhere.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. One man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yes. And the opposite has been true, you know, where I've heard from past, you know, well after I've hired a person, oh my goodness, you got stuck with that one.
Yeah, you got that one.
I'm very involved in the Association of Legal Administrators.
Everybody knows each other.
Everybody knows each other, right? So you know, in that casual conversation, oh, you ended up with that one. Oh, good luck with that. And I'd say, you know, actually, they're incredible.
Yeah, that turned them around.
Or it was a better fit. Yeah. Not everybody's meant to
culturally,
work.
Culturally, every culture is a little bit different, and I agree with that. Now, going back to the application for a moment. So we've covered, I know, reasons for leaving a little bit tricky. One of the other things that we see a lot of is misdemeanor, something like a misdemeanor. If somebody has on their application, we've all made mistakes at some point or another. Some of us, maybe it was a misdemeanor, maybe it was something greater or lesser, but everybody has a skeleton or two in their closet, whether it's being fired or a misdemeanor or something else. Do you recommend that people, when is the right time to tell an employer that you have a misdemeanor? If you're filling out an application, do you check off the box? Or if you're not in an application process, some companies don't do an application, at what point in the interview process? This question actually was just asked to us by a job seeker last week, and I didn't know what to say to the individual, because this person was already up for a job and an offer and hadn't yet disclosed the fact that there was a misdemeanor on the record. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when we offer someone a position, it's contingent upon a successful background check. We do go through an application process, and there are those questions on there. I think it just is felony.
Yeah, okay, so
misdemeanor. But I've seen some applications with misdemeanors on them. I think it's important to state that, and if you're going to give consent to a background check, at that point you're going to say, you'll see something on there.
So you would recommend being very upfront about it early on in the interview. That way it doesn't catch anybody by surprise.
Yeah, because if this becomes a problem, you're wasting their time, you're wasting your own time. If they're really stuck on that, then maybe that's not the right place for you. But if they're willing to listen, if they're willing to say, oh, okay, you were 17, you made a mistake,
yeah,
it's many years ago, or, you know, people have issues. But, you know, a lot of that's going to show up on those background checks. In the situations where we've come across something, we talk to the person.
Yeah, because there's always a story.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories of all time was a job seeker we had placed years ago, and she was temping for us and was up for a position with a client of ours, and it was very early on during when the recession was still very heavy, nobody was being hired, and I'll never forget this, it made me so proud. She called me and she said, Jennifer, I want you to know what you're going to find on my background. You're going to find that I have 2 or 3 misdemeanors, they're related to drugs and alcohol, they're from about 7 years ago, and I've been sober ever since, and you can call my sponsor or whatever it's called and verify it with that person, and you have my word that I will do great by you. And she's still employed at the company to this day, and I just am so grateful that that client took a chance on her, because even though sometimes if you have 2 or 3 misdemeanors, if it's 5 or 7 years ago, sometimes people will forego it if you're showing better behavior patterns since then.
Right.
But sometimes if it's more recently, like another gentleman had 3 related alcohol incidents within the last year and a half, and so it's a little bit harder, I've found, to overcome those sorts of obstacles as opposed to, say, one DUI.
It always is. That is harder to overcome when it's recent.
And multiple.
And multiple, sure. People make mistakes, and sometimes they make a lot of mistakes. But, you know, sometimes they learn from them. And that person that went ahead and got that help that she needed, and that can be an extremely loyal employee if somebody takes a chance on them.
Yeah.
I've had employees who've run into alcohol issues. They're valuable employees. They go downhill fast, but you work with them.
Yeah.
And you help them, you know, get back on their feet. And, you know, some of those employees are still at the companies that I've been at. They're just very grateful to have a chance.
That somebody gave them a second chance.
Absolutely.
Because I think that's what it comes down to, is that you don't want to punish somebody who's already been punishing themselves, especially if they're on the recovery track or if they're doing something to turn their lives around. We all slip and fall, and it's about, you know, picking yourself up after you fall, I think, and rebuilding your life, which is so important.
It is. And that's that personal awareness. That's that self-investment. And you have to give yourself a chance if somebody else is willing to give you a chance. But if you can't hack it, if you continue to make that mistake, I don't think an employer is in the wrong to say this is too disruptive to the business, and, you know, at some point they have to let go.
So along those lines, so say, for example, it was another company, it wasn't yours, because I know mm-hmm. a lot of the bigger companies do go through an application process. When is the right time? Because sometimes you don't even know if a company is going to do a background check. At what point would you recommend disclosing it? Would you say when you know you're getting an offer?
Yeah, I think at the offer stage, if you're coming back for a second or third interview, sure, you're going to want to say, I see that this is getting more serious. I'm very excited. I want to be completely upfront. If you're, you know, this is something that you're going to see on my background.
Record or, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there have been times where I've talked to people where they've disclosed it to me and they've explained it. It's come on the background check exactly as they've said it was. I look at their experience. I look at my guess of how they would fit within the company, and I've hired them.
Because you make a judgment call. That's it. I give people a chance to fail once, and that's it. Is mm-hmm. I want to believe the best in people, and I want to believe that all people are good at heart and have a chance to be successful unless you prove me otherwise. And if you prove me otherwise, then, you know, you're going to give somebody a chance. But if, you know, you scrub that chance, then that's where it can get a little bit more tricky.
Well, you want to remind them that, you know, they were given a chance. Now they've got to prove that they can do the job and they can do it well. Again, fit's very important. If it's not working for one party, let's try to fix it.
Yeah.
Because employers can do the TLC thing too. They can take it, they can leave it, or they can try to change it. And by leaving it, they can fire a person.
Yeah.
They can suspend them, you know. And that the industry is very important. There's manufacturing industries. There, where in the workshop, it's a very different type of interaction
atmosphere
and atmosphere than a professional environment.
Professional services is a little bit different experience.
Yeah, very different.
So you've given some amazing tips so far on what to do and how to handle it if you're, you know, in a job you don't like, or you're coming across a challenging question you have to answer on an application or in an interview. Kind of leads us back full circle. What if you're in a job and you like it, but you hit a point in the job where
plateau,
exactly, great word. So if you plateau and you've lost that lust, but like we began the conversation, it's not time to cut the job loose yet. What do you recommend at that stage to re-engage in a job that does have potential?
Well, sometimes if there's movement opportunity, you can decide whether there's another chance for you to spread your wings in a different position, and you could apply for
movement within the organization.
Within the organization,
you mean?
Okay. Sometimes there's special projects that you might offer your services for. If you see somebody's struggling in an area that you have expertise, you can offer to help them. If it's not, as long as you're taking care of what you're supposed to take care of, if you have extra time, if you can position yourself in a way that you can assist to make the department or the team run better, and that excites you, just being aware of your surroundings, being aware of when that opportunity might hit, is important. You have to take ownership. You know, you can stay stagnant and you can resent everybody for it. Or you can try to talk to somebody and say, hey, you know what? I love this job. I love this place, but I'm not really excited about what I'm doing right now. Is there anything that I can help with that? You know, I can learn. People want to learn. People want to grow.
They want to learn, grow, expand. If you're not expanding, you're contracting.
Yeah. So I always like to give people opportunities. I want them to tell me what it is that you love to do and how can we try to incorporate a piece of that into what you do here. And sometimes it's possible, sometimes it's not. And if you're in a job that is paying the bills and everything's pretty copacetic, but you're not exactly challenged or you're not, you know, excited anymore, but you're okay, keep your eyes and ears open. Put the good vibe out there to the universe or
exactly.
to your boss or whatever. And be grateful that you have something that is taking care of your life.
And then it gives you choice, because that's what I tell people all the time, is there's a big difference between reactive versus proactive job hunting. And when you're in a job, you should never reactively job hunt and react emotionally. You should take your time and proactively think about and choose what it is you want.
This is your life. I mean, this is something, it's very stressful and traumatic to change jobs.
It is. I tell people this all the time. So one of my old mentors years ago said, before we ever work with a candidate, you always want to ask them three questions. Do you like your bosses? Do you like the company? And do you like the work you're doing? And at my recruiting agency, if somebody says yes to all three of those, unless there's an extenuating circumstance such as lack of benefits or severely being underpaid or perhaps a long commute, we actually won't work with the person, because it's such a hard thing in life to find a job where you like the people, you like your boss, and you like the work you're doing. And so I'll often spend more time coaching those people into staying in their jobs, even though it does me no good as a recruiter, except for humanity's sake of trying to help more people find happiness and joy. And what I really ask them is, on a scale of 1 to 10, if 10, you're miserable, you can't go into the office every day, and 1 is you're happy as a clam, what level are you at? And really, I, on my end, work at only working with people who are at a 7, 8, or 9, and do everything within my power to help people figure out what's missing in their job, such that if that thing were present, like, what's missing that would leave you more engaged or enthralled or more present in your job?
Yeah, think about that. Think about what's going to make you happy. And, you know, think about if it has nothing to do with the job at all. Maybe it's something at home. You know, maybe it's a feeling that just resonates with you all day long, but has nothing to do with the job, and you're blaming it on the job.
And again, it comes back full circle to how we began the conversation about being happy. Happiness begins within, and if you're looking outside of yourself, either to a lover, to a friend, to a boss, or to your professional world for happiness, you're going to spend the rest of your life looking, because it's really more of an internal reflection thing. And the more that you spend on figuring out what brings you joy, one of the first guests I had on the show was Allison Garrido, and she said, you know, you want to look at the beginning of every day, like, what do you enjoy doing? Do you like talking to people? Do you like working with spreadsheets? And the more that you can focus on the tasks that you like and move away from the tasks that you dislike, the more it's going to help you to find more fulfillment in your career. We all have things we're good at, and we have things we're not good at. I went out today, one of the girls in my office, it was her birthday, and she wanted Tito's tacos. I was like, awesome, I'm going to be a great boss. I'm going to go get her Tito's tacos. I forgot. I hate driving. I hate parking lots. And I got there and started having like a panic attack in the parking lot because seven or eight people almost hit me getting in there. I'm like, I love this employee, but I am never again going to Tito's tacos. I will find somebody else to do that because that did not bring me joy or happiness.
Right.
But you have to know. Some people, like, look at all the people out there Uber driving right now. It's great that people have access to a stream of revenue. One of my Uber drivers the other day was telling me he was a courier for many years, 20, 30, 40 years. And I said, well, what had you switch to Ubering? He said, the money is about the same. But he said, it's so great not to have somebody yelling at me every day and saying, where are you? And when are you going to be here? And he said, it's just his life has become so much more peaceful.
He found a fix.
Yeah, he found something that could bring him happiness. And some people like being directed.
One of the things that you were talking about is that sparked something inside of me is, you know, when you're in a job where there's something, a part of it you don't like, but you like a lot of the other things, maybe there's somebody who could take it on, and you could take something that they don't like
you're
that you
genius,
love.
You're a genius, Wendy.
Right?
That's
brilliant.
You know,
kind of a little bit of a sharing. Because some people just dig organizing and others hate it.
Exactly.
So if you've got a friend who's a good organizer, they can help you organize yourself, and you can help them with something that maybe they don't like.
You're so right, because it's perfect example is one of the girls in my office is brilliant. For me, I like big picture stuff and I'm doing speeches, and she loves organizing. Every time I send out a document to the team, she'll send it back and it's formatted and it's color coded. I'm like, oh my God, I appreciate your brain so much. Thank God your brain works differently than mine, because my brain wouldn't even think that the document's not formatted properly.
Yeah. Well, you know, we all have our forte. We all have little things that excite us.
I love what you just said, though, and I really want our listeners to take that away, is that there's always a solution. It's not an either-or thing. If, like Wendy said, if there's something that brings you joy and fulfillment and you like almost every aspect of your job except maybe 10 or 20%, you can create strategic alliances in the office and create ways to have workability. And so I think that that's a perfect way to leave our listeners today. So for those of you who just got to the show, this is Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. We're on every Monday at 4 p.m. Today, we have had the wonderful and enlightening Wendy Sweet here with us, who's an expert in the field of human resources. And next week, I am delighted to have join us my business coach, Julian Adler, who's up in the San Francisco Bay Area. And Julian has worked with companies like Google and Apple and helped top performing executives with internal company issues, as well as business professionals with growing their businesses, such as myself. And what we're going to be speaking about next week is perspective. And how important our perspective in life is. So tune in next week, every Monday at 4. Next week, Julian Adler will be joining us on the show. And you can always find me online at jenniferkhill.com, or you can find my book, Stop Hoping, Start Hunting.com is the book website, or getyourselfthejob.com is my blog with over 200 complimentary articles on how to get yourself that job you want. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and have a wonderful rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.